You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. And joining me on the other line, you might have heard him. We were actually on a podcast together on Locked On NBA sometime in July, I think. It's Locked On Mavs host Nick. How do you say your last name again, Nick? I'm terrible with names. I don't even want to butcher.
Nick Angstead.
What's Angstead? Up? Angstead. I know your Twitter's at Nick Van Exit. That is easy. I'm so bad with names sometimes. I don't want to butcher or anything. So yeah, like I said, Nick and I actually did a podcast earlier this summer for Locked On NBA one time, so you might have heard him there. But today we're going to preview Doug McDermott for our kind of Pacers player preview season series before the season starts, obviously, in about, I think, 30 days of most of the first Pacers game. But first, before we get to Doug McDermott, Nick, I wanted to ask you real quick, if you had to pick one team, give me it. Where's Jimmy Butler going? I know that's kind of the number one NBA news right now.
Oh, man. His list was so weird, right? Like, Clippers, Nets, and what was the third one?
Knicks, right? Knicks.
Yeah, I totally forgot because they're completely irrelevant right now. The Clippers, they would have to give up a lot, and they would just be terrible if they added him. The Nets are kind of interesting. They're in the East. If you took away some of the – they have enough, like, decent players with some upside, like a Caris LeVert type, or maybe D'Angelo Russell could be sent back. But D'Angelo Russell and Towns and Wiggins on the same team is – I don't know. I'm not sure if the NBA is ready for that. And then with the Knicks, who would they send back? Their GM just came out like a week ago and said that they're not giving up draft picks, you know, for players right now, especially players that they feel like that they can get in free agency. And so that doesn't seem like an option. So to me, I think the Clippers seem like the best option or like the most likely option. That seemed, after the Woj tweets yesterday, it seemed like his, you know, destination of choice, but I think Brooklyn's probably his best fit. I think that coach is good. I think that, you know, they have a lot of interesting pieces and young pieces, but I don't know. He hasn't really even proved – Jimmy Butler hasn't really proved that he can, you know, help develop young players. He has two of the best in Minnesota, and it hasn't worked out very well.
Yeah, I think my only take is that I think he wants to come back east just because the competition is – I don't want to say he wasn't playing the best players in the league, but it helps that there aren't as many of the top – let's say of the top 10 players list that SI had, I think almost all of them were basically in the West. So I think he wants to come back to the East, but then it seemed like the list is big markets. Like he wants to be in LA or New York. So I don't know where he wants to be. He was in Chicago, so he's been in a big market before. I have a feeling the list is kind of, it's kind of out there, but nobody's going to follow it. I think there'll be some surprise, you know, like the Oklahoma City kind of team that steps up and makes a move for him if they can.
Yeah. But I don't think Boston was even on Kyrie's list. Was it?
I don't remember. I feel like his was the Knicks. I don't remember his second or third team. I think Boston came in last minute because he kind of saw the chemistry there and the coaching and got kind of sold on that. But, I mean, obviously Oklahoma City wasn't on Paul George's list, I don't think. I mean, it was L.A. So,
Kyrie's list was San Antonio, Miami, New York, and Minnesota.
Okay, so it wasn't any of those teams.
Yeah, it wasn't even on his list. So who knows? There could be a wild card scenario. There could be, you know, apparently he doesn't want to go to the Lakers, which, you know, is whatever.
I think Lakers are going to give up anything for him. So who knows what he's going to do. I think, though, his end goal is to get with another star in next summer, wherever he is, to kind of team up with somebody. It seems like that's sort of his second move he's looking towards.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if he could team up with, like, a young, budding superstar? Like, I don't know, somebody that was a former number one pick that is, you know, on track to be and has been on all NBA teams and, you know, had this great future. And
yeah, you would think two top three picks who are destined to maybe be, like –
yeah,
talk about the next young duo that's gonna shock the NBA, like the next Harden and Durant and Westbrook kind of trio was supposed to form or whatever. But who the hell knows? let's move on from Jimmy Butler because I just, you know, we don't know. We'll see what happens if he actually gets traded before the Monday. I think they open training camp on Monday. But let's talk about Doug McDermott because that's who we're here to actually talk about. As a Locked On Mavs host, you've obviously watched a decent amount of McDermott last year. He's probably maybe the best stretch of his career with the Mavs. Kind of that 26 game stretch was awesome for him. But if you had to give me, like, a brutally honest take of McDermott, let's hear it.
Excellent, excellent three-point shooter. Everything else, that's my scouting report on him. He's going to be an awesome three-point shooter, and especially in Dallas' system, they run multiple ball handlers a lot. They like to, you know, move these off-ball shooters around a lot. He thrived there. I mean, he almost shot 50% from, you know, from the three-point line. He was playing the four. He was playing the three. You know, it was a great fit for him. It was great to have guys like JJ Barea and I was going to say Devin Harris, but he got traded for him. It was good to have, you know, point guards like JJ Barea and Yogi Ferrell, you know, playing with him in that second unit to try and get him open and find him whenever he was, you know, wide open in the, you know, in the corners on the top of here, whatever. His first dunk, ironically, was his first bucket was a dunk, ironically, though. He's known, you know, as kind of only a shooter, and the first one was like this, like, monstrous dunk that he drove coast to coast in the lane. And you're like, wait a minute, who is this? Like, man, are we getting a newly revived Doug McDermott? And then he settled into his role later. But the Pacers are getting this great three-point shooter. I mean, no question. His reputation precedes him.
Yeah, that was kind of the thing with Bogdan last year, too, a little bit, is the first few times I watched Bogdan, I was expecting kind of the Doug McDermott type guy, sit in the corner and get the ball to the three. But, like, the first week with the Pacers, Bogdan put the ball on the ground and went to the rim, like, multiple times to score in the lane, which was kind of surprising. With McDermott, I've kind of started to watch film him as he signed with the Pacers. It seems like, can he actually do any of that? Can he actually do anything besides be sort of an off-the-screen kind of three-point shooter or stand-up shooter? Is there anything more in his game, I guess? I don't know. Could he kind of fill a Bogdan role at some point, or is he too kind of one notch below and only kind of one-dimensional?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to want him, you know, trusted with the ball, you know, his hand trying to make a play. He's not a guy that you throw out to the wing and are like, hey, go make something happen. He's a finisher of plays, really. You have guys in the NBA that can make things happen, and you have guys in the NBA that finish the things that are happening. You know, and Doug is kind of one of those things, the guys that finishes. Where the same way a guy like DeAndre Jordan finishes around the rim, Doug McDermott finishes on, you know, around the 3-point line. He, you know, is the recipient of assists and not the guy that really dishes them out or, you know, tries to make a lot of things happen in the ISO game or anything like that. He's an okay post-up player because he's pretty big. And so when he gets matched up on somebody smaller, he'll go into the paint and try to score over them and things like that. But yeah, no, you're getting a 3-point shooter. And he's a great one, though. That's the thing is, you know, every team needs shooting. Every team needs spacing. And if you need somebody to come off the bench or even start in spots and spread the floor, he's definitely going to do that.
Yeah, I remember when he played against the Pacers in that Mavs-Pacer game in, I think, February it was, that when Lance was guarding him and Lance Stephenson just got lost in him, McDermott just made him pay, like, every time. Yes. Like, Lance would be sort of, like, watching the ball, and McDermott would sort of just, like, shift a few feet over to the corner, and all of a sudden he'd get a pass, and Lance would be in an off position, not be able to stop him. So that's what, I guess, was sort of the kind of the pressing memory of McDermott in my mind. Like, okay, this guy is just going to be somebody who Oladipo or Tyreek Evans, wherever it is, just feed him. He can come, they can kick in, they go in the lane and sort of feed him in the corners. But my really thought was, though, if he's only really one-dimensional three-point shooter, I don't know how many minutes he's really going to get, especially if this team is going to go like nine man deep and they can get, you know, minutes out of Tyreek at small forward and they can get Bogdanović obviously at small forward. Does McDermott have a chance to obviously maybe play even some stretch four, or is he just so bad defensively it doesn't matter?
It depends on the matchups for sure, but he played a lot of stretch four with the Mavericks. Mavericks were playing Harrison Barnes at four, you know, for a lot of that time, so they were already, you know, used to having a deficiency there. But yeah, he can play it in spots, and I think coming off the bench, I think you're okay with a guy that at least has one excellent skill. You know, as long as he has something that he does super well, he can fit into that role. And I think pairing him with Tyreek Evans is going to be awesome. I think that you know, that duo is going to be pretty lethal. Is Tyreek Evans definitely going to come off the bench for the Pacers?
Yeah, it seems like he is the start of the season. I imagine he might end games with the team just because he is just that kind of playmaker, and he just will help alleviate some of the double teams and Oladipo that were inevitably going to happen this year now that people kind of exposed him in the playoffs. But I think he's going to start there because I think the Pacers kind of whole thing is having basically the same bench as the starters, but not as good, obviously, but having comparable players. So Tyreek kind of plays like Oladipo, Corey Joseph kind of plays like Darren Collison, McDermott kind of plays like Bogdanović. So you kind of have a seamless lane, so you can kind of move guys in and out. It doesn't like a change of game, where last year was like Lance was such a kind of different player than anybody on the team. It sort of made the bench play differently, which means they didn't kind of gel in the same way. So I think Tyreek's going to come off the bench, I would assume.
Yeah, that's interesting having, you know, the second unit and the first unit almost, you know, mirror each other. Okay, I have a Pacers hot take. This is not Doug McDermott related, but right. I have a Pacers hot take that I want to run by you.
Go ahead.
I think at the end of this season, Domantas Sabonis will be starting in place of Miles Turner.
That's if he doesn't get traded for Jimmy Butler, right?
If he doesn't get traded, yeah, if they don't trade Sabonis again or Miles Turner again. What's the thought on Miles Turner, Sabonis, and that whole, you know, like duo. They can't. I mean, it's kind of been proven they can't necessarily play together. But which guys are going to eventually win out?
So to tie actually back to McDermott, I actually would like to see a lineup of McDermott, Evan, Turner, kind of figure who else you want to put around them, but those three guys together, because if Turner keeps progressing on a three-point shooting, so let Turner kind of play with the bench, because I feel like you can, if he's really kind of improving the way he is, you can run an offense through Turner, which can totally help the bench unit, versus like Sabonis is a perfect complement, like next to Oladipo, pick and roll every time, you know, all that kind of stuff, but like you obviously want to kind of have to stagger Oladipo, because he can't, Oladipo's kind of the engine that runs the offense, but he can't be on the court 48 minutes. So you need that kind of extra, let's say 12 to 18 minutes come from somebody. And I would like to see Turner do that. And that's where I think McDermott kind of fits in with them, is that you can basically play Turner off the bench or play with the bench unit sometimes and basically get 5 3-point shooters. And if you have McDermott, who's theoretically, he's not going to probably shoot 50%, almost percenting him three, because that was kind of almost impossible.
It was wild. It was only 26 games, just to let everybody know.
Yeah.
You know, three attempts per game, and, you know.
Yeah, but if he's in the low 40s, I mean, that's still really good. I mean, I think Bogdan shot 40% last year, which is still good. So if he's in the low 40s, let's say, that all of a sudden makes that bench unit, like, extremely lethal. Because a lot of times the bench units in the NBA, they're not defensively great. They're usually, it's kind of like, they're basically there to hold the lead you have, per se. And so that's kind of what he'll need to do. So I like that, and I think Sabonis, again, could close games just because him and Oladipo have such a mesh, but I really want to see how Turner and Oladipo play together too, or Turner and Sabonis play together. That's like kind of – I really want to see it before I kind of judge how the end game, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think the word's still out on that. I think there's still definitely time to be, you know, to mess with that and try it and play it. The other thing about Doug McDermott is he's off the bench, and, you know, he's obviously, like we've talked about, and – it's just going to sound like a broken record, great three-point shooter. That can be devastating for a team, too. You talk about how not a lot of bench units are super, you know, defensive. If Doug McDermott comes in and hit three threes back-to-back-to-back, then all of a sudden, you've extended a lead, or, you know, come back in a lead and put yourself back into a game. And that kind of, like, it. Then all of a sudden he's drawing all this attention. And it can be devastating for other teams, especially if they have guys like, you know, like Lance Stephenson that are trying to guard him and trying to stay with him and trying to stick around with him.
Yeah, I mean, we pitched a lot with Bogdan, who in that playoff game hit 7 or 9 threes and just destroyed the Cavs. I mean, he almost was as good as LeBron for that little stretch in that game 3 of the playoffs. I mean, that's that's how lethal that was. I mean, that's Korver does that to teams all the time, and Pacers never really had a guy like this. You just go to you almost always reliable to make a three every game, 2 threes a game, will make one at least. But I'm interested, though, what your opinion is, McDermott's contract. You know, I get, as the Pacers, they have to overpay a little bit. Like, there's kind of that small market premium. So let's say McDermott maybe is worth like 3 for 15, but you got to give him the 22 because that's your small market, like that. But do you think he's extremely overpaid? Like, people think he's like very overpaid. He's not worth obviously 7 a year. So I don't know what your thought is.
Yeah, the contract completely blew me away. I did not expect him to get that kind of a deal. I expected maybe. He hasn't really gotten paid in his career, though. If you look down, you know, at the salaries that he's had, he just hasn't really, you know, made a ton of money. And so he's really, you know, going for it. I think the highest that he made in his in the NBA was last year, like $3.2 million with the Mavericks. And so he was definitely looking to get paid, and we should have seen it coming. But I don't know, like, what's the mid-level exception right now? It's closer to like what he got, right? It's like, you know, Doug McDermott got 7 something. Per year,
right? It's about 8. That was 8 last year. He's gonna be like 10 by the end, by the next
year. Yeah. So it's like he's barely under the mid level. He's under the mid level exception, which to me, mid level exception should be for these like middle of the road kind of players. But yeah, for the use that the Pacers are gonna get out of him, the other thing that I think is important about Doug McDermott is he can be a great safety net, kind of like a tight end, like in Dallas, Jason Witten has been this guy that was such a safety net for Dak Prescott forever, and he
really missing that right now.
Oh, completely missing that. And you know, just when all the offense breaks down, when all the you know, all the reads are done, and he goes through all his progressions, he has Jason Witten, you know, over the middle or underneath to try and, you know, just easy pass the ball. And I think for, you know, a guard like Aaron Holiday, however much he's going to play, that can be a great safety net. You know, to just have a guy that's guaranteed 3 points in the corner or on the top of the key or wherever he ends up being.
Yeah, and I think, too, the fact that he's going to be like the fourth option out there at times. I mean, he starts with the starters, even the bench guys. I mean, Tyree's going to be the one guy, or Oladipo's going to be the one. And then you're looking at probably either Sabonis is going to be the number two option maybe, or Turner. Sabonis was really well off the bench last year in terms of, like, they fed him the ball in the post a ton. So yeah. As the third option, it's like he's not going to get a ton of, like, respect by guys versus, like, I think McDermott, obviously, in a situation where he's like, he can probably be stopped if you really need to, but if you put your best defender on him, then it kind of opens everything else up. So that's what I like about him personally. It's just, he'll just continue to stretch the floor. And it's kind of this continued of a culture thing with the Pacers where it's like, yeah, we want to play a certain style. That's why they got rid of Lance, to be honest. They wanted to play the stretch five. Everybody almost seamlessly switching guys on defense as a possibility, because at least I know McDermott isn't like a great defender, but he has size. He's not like, you know, a 6'2 guy out there like Darren Collins sometimes, who really can't handle his own. He can switch on the guys if need be for isolated incidents. So I like McDermott in that sense. I lean towards a little overpaid, but like I said, it's the small market premium. I don't know. Probably Dallas doesn't have to do that sometimes, but Indiana has to overpay guys. They overpaid Monte Ellis. They overpaid David West, but it's what you got to do to get a free agent, because it's like none come here. I mean, nobody comes to Indiana, basically.
Yeah, the Mavericks overpaid Dwight Powell when they extended him after he was sent over in the Rondo trade. So
yeah, Wesley Matthews too, right? I mean,
the Wes Matthews one was interesting. They initially paid him his right, you know, contract, what he should have been worth.
But not the Achilles right contract.
It was $14 million or something like that. And then $14 million a year, something like that. And then after DeAndre Jordan and Emoji Gate happened, when he, you know, went back to the Clippers, then they upped his contract, and now it looks overpaid. But at the time, it was like, okay, that's a decent, you know, that's a decent contract for a guy that brings, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, I mean, Dallas has the benefit of being in that no tax state, and I think Dallas is probably actually, at least it's in the top 10 of markets, right, in the NBA? It's got to be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably top seven. So it has that going for it. We're like, the Pacers are a bottom 25 market. You know, if you're not homegrown talent, you're not getting, that's why they traded Paul George for guys who they thought they could keep, because you're not getting a free agent. You're really not getting a Jimmy Butler per se to come here. You have to trade for him and make him sell him when they're here. It's a totally different mindset, but it's worked for them. You know, the Mavs have not quite as been great recently, but who knows?
Gosh. Well, hey, they have Luka Doncic now. So there's hope. There's definite hope. And we're looking forward to it.
So let's kind of wrap up on what's kind of, if you had a guess, the season McDermott has. So last year, I guess you take out his Mavs season, let's per se, take the 20th game by the Mavs. It was 9 points per game, an insignificant, 2.5 rebounds, insignificant, 1 assist a game, basically steals and blocks didn't really matter. He shot, obviously, ridiculous, 48, 49, 85, you know, whatever you want to call him. I mean, basically 50, 40, 90, close to it. What do you think he has this year? Do you think he probably doesn't get the same amount of points because he doesn't get as many shots, but you think he gets, you know, 40% and 50% from the field, or the kind of, what's kind of your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be put in a position where, you know, that's going to be in jeopardy, you know, his shooting percentages or anything like that. I think he has creators around him. I think that backup unit we've been talking about with Corey Joseph and Tyreke Evans is the two ball handler, you know, guys that he's sort of had in Dallas. Now they're not as savvy veterans, you know, as the guys that he had in Dallas with JJ Barea, but you know, I think he's going to have similar numbers, and everywhere Doug's gone, he's averaged 20 or so minutes a game, and they've paid him enough that he's, you know, if we're trying to guess how much he's going to play, you look at what they paid him, they intend to use him, you know,
yeah,
they're hopefully going to get, you know, enough use out of Doug McDermott to warrant that contract. And the other thing about him is coaches love Doug McDermott. He's a coach's son. His dad still coaches at Creighton. And coaches just love him. So I think Nate McMillan is going to – he's going to fall in love with him all over again. He's going to fall in love with basketball all over again with Doug McDermott.
Yeah, I think part of McDermott is he's sort of an insurance policy on Bojan potential decline, or if he leaves next year for agency. I think that's why they paid McDermott, maybe much as he did too. But the thing you said about him being a coach's son, kind of like the fit, that kind of fits the culture for the Pacers. They want some guy who can fit in. They don't want – I mean, obviously there's certain players you allow to become alpha dogs, but I don't think they want – that alpha dog player in their locker room, unless it's like some super veteran that's really great. They want those kind of guys that, hey, you can come in and you'll just kind of mesh into our culture, and we'll kind of, because they have kind of this, at least they think around this really good culture going. I don't know how that might last. They have so many free agents. Things might get tense, especially as guys realize they're on contract here, but that's kind of the hope. So I think McDermott, I think he'll, I don't know if it's 20 minutes game though this year, just because he kind of is like, I guess he'd be, so the bench is going to be Joseph, Sabonis, Evan. So he's the ninth guy off the bench. So I don't know how that affects it, but I think he's probably the fit in guy in any injury. I mean, I don't expect Bojan to play 82 games again. I mean, I don't know. I just don't think any guy can play 82 games. I think it's pretty rare down the NBA for most guys to play 82 games, especially a guy who's playing international games all year long and is probably playing basketball 12 months a year at a competitive level. So that he'll have injury at some point, I feel like. But, you know, I think he can get to the points. I think maybe not nine, but between 7 and 9, because he hit 2 or 3 threes a game. That's enough. That's all he needs. That's pretty easy for him, I think.
Yeah, and that could be, you know, and also the gravity that he has too. You know, with being such an incredible 3-point shooter and having that reputation, he's gonna, you know, pull guys out of the paint. He's gonna be able to pull guys, you know, Out's 3-point line and even farther than that. So that's an invaluable component of Doug McDermott's game that's going to help guys that drive a lot like Tyreek Evans.
Yeah, I think Oladipo is going to love him too. I'm interested. Okay, so I got one last thing. This is a weird lineup, and you can tell me if you think it's the crappiest lineup you heard. So what if they play a lineup? So I'm thinking Collison, Oladipo, Bojan, Doug McDermott, and Turner. So you got two kind of negative defensive players, and Collison, the third one. But you got this, like, basically all guys who can shoot close to 40% from three or above.
Yeah.
You think that has any chance of working, or is the defense just terrible?
I mean, the defense, you're sorely lacking on the defensive end. But you have Oladipo, you have Miles Turner, who are both, you know, promising, if not good, defensive players. And sometimes that's all you need to play, another team. And the lineups in the NBA are wild. The Mavericks have been starting Harrison Barnes at the four for a long time. They've been playing these weird three-guard lineups where they play J.J. Barea, Yogi Ferrell, and Devin Harris all at the same time. And on many other teams, those three guys are all just solely point guards, and they would never play them anywhere else.
That's true.
The NBA plays weird lineups. And I think that lineup would totally work. You're going to give up a lot defensively. And if you're playing, like a Pistons with, Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond, then that's you're going to have some issues for sure. But you could also run that team off the floor because they're not going to be able to, guard all the way up to the three-point line.
Yeah, I guess I would like to just see it against some of the worst teams. Like, you're looking at, like, Orlando's probably going to be crappy again, Atlanta. Like, that's the one thing about McMillan, I guess, the kind of whole year was – I don't think he was super creative. Like, he didn't try weird lineups like that. I didn't have the team last year to do it, and this year they sort of do. So we'll see what he does, because, like, that Kyle Quinn, too, might not play a lot, but he kind of could be in a lineup against one of those kind of crappy teams, because you're probably going to beat those teams anyways, and so you could just try stuff, because you don't know what will work, and you might need it in the playoffs. And that's kind of the sign of a good coach, is somebody who's willing to kind of see how something works for 5 minutes a game.
Yeah, it's that Popovich kind of thing where he used to play all these weird lineups all the time, and still kind of does do some stuff like that. But he had the autonomy to do that, and he had a team that he could play those weird lineups, and they still would win 50 games in their sleep. A coach like Nate McMillan, who's last year looked like he was holding on to his job for dear life.
Well, he might have pulled that. He got a contract extension, so he pulled that away. He had a great year last year. I mean, I think he had a really crappy first year. I thought the team really underachieved, but his second year was really good. So.
Saying in the second year, he was like, man, my job was in jeopardy last year. And then now I got to, I have to do some real things here. So he's playing the lineup. He's not, as free to experiment as he was.
Yeah. I mean, last year he just, not that he ran all over on the ground, but he just, like, once he figured out what all evil was about the first week, he's like, I'm giving him the ball every time and let him figure it out. Like, he was like, I don't need to do anything. This guy's got faster than everybody else in the court. We'll set pick and rolls for him, and we'll let him do what he wants, and we'll occasionally set up Turner and occasionally set up other guys, but we're just going to do that. But I think this year he'll have a little more freedom just because now he has the extension and he had a great year, and it's a younger team. It's totally different than the Paul George team just because the vibe on it, there's a lot more of, like, this younger and happier vibe than it was with the Paul George and Monte Ellis and teams where it was like, felt like you were pulling out your teeth to play on that team. Like, you were have to be dragged into the stadium to even start the game.
We miss Monte Ellis in Dallas, though.
That's why I got the contract in Indiana, because of that Dallas year. That 1 year in Dallas was awesome.
He showed up at Dirk's. Dirk had this tennis charity tennis event, and Monte Ellis showed up, and he walked in with two rackets in his hand. And it was he walked in with a racket in both hands, and it was the best.
Yeah, I mean, I think Monte, Monte's an odd player. He was really kind of decent with the Warriors when he played for them. I just think he hit Indiana at a bad time. He had some knee injuries and the tail in his career, and he got a really, like I said, overpaid contract. So that kind of spoiled things for him, because it was sort of like people expected him to beat something that he really wasn't. And, I think if he had been the Pacers 5 years earlier, he would have fit in perfectly. It's just he ended up at a point the NBA started passing him by to, because he really wasn't a great three-point shooter, and that's kind of what you needed to be a guard in the league.
He has it all, though. He has it all.
Yeah, he's Monte Ellis is my favorite Monte Ellis thing is when he said that quote of the only thing that separates me and D Wade is like his three champion like that, and I'm like, that's not the only thing, but that was a good quote. He's a good quote. So as I said at the start of the show, Nick is a Locked On Mavs host. They actually are one of our top 10 NBA podcasts, right? Or overall?
So we crack the top 10, every once in a while.
So. Yeah, so of our Locked On NBA channel, he's top 10.
There's a top five that we will never crack, though, because their fan base is just so massive. There's the Locked On Fantasy, there's NBA, there's Lakers, there's Celtics. Like, we will never break into that. And I think Bulls is one of those. But
Well, they have such a big market, and they have so many more people. But those Boston fans are nuts. I mean, they're so hyper-Boston to the max that you can't crack a Boston. You can't beat a Boston thing you're only looking at local audiences. Like Boston.
So we're the top five of everyone else.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think we should have like a top five of like underappreciated market or small market teams.
Yes.
Or whatever. Is there anything you're doing?
I have one more question for you. So yeah, we on Lockdown Mavericks, we've been doing these positional rankings where we rank the starting point guards, shooting guards, you know, of every single team.
Okay.
We had a debate, me and Isaac. He had Spencer Dinwiddie at a certain point, and I had Darren Collison at a certain point, and they, we both had them above each other. I picked Darren Collison because I thought he shot the ball really well. I thought he was really good last year. And he had Spencer Dinwiddie. Who would you rather have? Who do you think is better right now?
So it depends on years, right? What's Dinwiddie's age? He's pretty young, right? He's in his maybe early 20s.
I think it's 26 this year or something.
Okay, I couldn't remember
how many. We're talking about just this upcoming year. Who do you think is going to be better this year?
You know, Collison had like maybe a top 10 point guard offensive season. Like he had a ridiculously good offensive season last year. Like led the league in 3-point percentage, turnover ratio, all that stuff. I mean, you look at like some of his offensive rating numbers. I know the NBA stats and the B-ball refs are kind of screwy, but like he was consistently in the top of both those. So if he does that again, which I mean, you would think he's not going to have too far of a decline yet. He's not like that old yet. I think he's 30 years old and he's where he's playing. I think he's going to have a pretty good year, but Dinwiddie has the ability to play kind of like kind of whatever, because he's playing with the Nets, so he kind of might have do whatever the hell he wants kind of thing. But I think Collison's going to have a better year and at least more of an impact because he's going to be on like a team that could win 45 games. I would have put Collison this year. Future, Dinwiddie probably, because Collison probably has maybe 1 or 2 years left. But next year, I like Collison just because I think he can repeat his last year at least somewhat. Maybe not 46% from three, but maybe like 40 to 42, which is still really, really good.
And Dinwiddie has Russell coming back, and he could be traded for Jimmy Butler at any moment. And then as soon as he gets traded to the Timberwolves, he's going to get benched behind Derrick Rose. So,
yeah, that would be so stupid. Derrick Rose. I mean, the whole Jimmy Butler thing, we didn't say it, but it really – Thibodeau should be fired before Butler gets traded. I mean, that's ridiculous going on there.
Is this – I mean, it's not a one-to-one comparison, but it's almost like the Khalil Mack, John Gruden thing, right? You can't alienate the best player on the team. You know,
yeah, I also think, though, the owner maybe I can't remember if last year the owner overrode the front office on signing Wiggins. And that was a big deal. They didn't re-sign Wiggins. They didn't have to re-sign Wiggins to a five-year deal. They could have waited one more year. And that sort of – because Wiggins is not – you know, if they waited one more year on Wiggins, they could have given a much cheaper deal this year for sure. Because more like a Clint Capela deal, maybe, which is where he probably is valued at. If that might be still being too high, but that's where he'd be valued at. Not like the $30 million, more like 18 to 20 range.
Yeah, especially since there's just not as much money now. We've seen guys, you know.
Yeah. I mean, Wiggins would have got like an offer sheet probably, right? He would have got those, maybe that kind of offer sheet like Zach LaVine got from the Kings or whatever, but he would have not got 5 years, 150. No way.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
It's a crazy situation. And I love all the beefs. I love Nick Wiggins. I love, we hate Steven Jackson in Dallas, but yeah, you love when somebody pokes back and, you know.
We like him in Indiana, except for his the brawl in 2005. He was okay.
Oh, yeah. Dallas and Indiana both have reasons.
We've had Dallas and the Pacers have a lot of overlapping players. Jan Mahimi, Monte Ellis, Steven Jackson. I mean, there's a lot of some weird. Carlisle used to be our head coach. Now it's your head coach.
Well, Steven Jackson never played for Dallas, but he played on the We Believe 2007 Warriors that beat
Mavericks. Oh, okay.
That's why Mavericks won't
skate. Gotcha. That makes sense. But I'm saying there's still a lot of overlap. It's a kind of, I don't know, maybe there's some kind of connection. I don't know how, some seamless connection between, because Mark Cuban's from an Indiana University graduate too. Yeah. So a lot of weird connections between the two.
I really thought the Pacers were going to go after Yogi Ferrell this summer. I really wanted to see that happen.
You know, I thought they were, but I think they had like $20 million in space and they like wanted to get two starters out of it or two rotation players. And that was kind of their goal, I think. You know, they have to go to this 9-man rotation. I think that's what kind of they wanted to be kind of deep like the Raptors were last year. I think that's why the Raptors won 59 games. So, you know, I guess the problem is that they drafted Holiday. If they didn't draft Holiday, they maybe could have used the basically the whatever they used on O'Quinn. Was it the room level exception? I think they used whatever they had, the $4 million. They could have used that on Ferrell, but
yeah,
it's all right. It's all right. They have a lot of guards. That's the thing. They have a plethora of guards really right now.
And they drafted Holiday, so.
Yeah, they have so many guards. Anything you want to promote for Lockdown Mavs?
Yeah, we're just doing our player previews right now, normal stuff. We just talked about yesterday or on Thursday's show, whenever this drops, I don't know, but on Thursday's show, we talked about the investigation results and everything. I had the editor-in-chief of Maps Moneyball, Rebecca Lawson, on, and we discussed all that. It was a pretty tough podcast, honestly, to get through, but if you want to know about the results, if you want to know why things happened or what we learned that's different than, you know, when the report first came out by Sports Illustrated, you can go listen to that. We, you know, explain everything. So you can go listen to that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge part of the NBA story right now is before the season is what happened with the Mavs and their whole organization and some of the institutional sexism that was there. So that's, I definitely have to go in and listen to, because it's kind of a evergreen podcast for NBA people. It's not really, you don't have to be a Mavs fan to kind of be interested in it, because it's such a kind of interesting topic to
hear
about. Yeah. That's all we got for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, you can follow our show at Locked On Pacers, me at Freedom Adam 5. You can follow Nick actually at Nick Van Exit. It's how it sounds. It's how you spell it. As always, you can catch this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast. I don't know if we're on Spotify still, but you'll let us know if not. Tweet at the show again at Locked On Pacers. That's all we got for today's show. We'll be back on Monday with our weekly pod with me and Tony East. Have a great rest of your day.